Isn't this a sports show?
You're the Ben Roethlisberger of...
I don't want to be the Ben Roethlisberger
sports radio
of
Twitter. Sports radio Twitter? Just blocking people out here?
Almost entirely.
People who have never even heard of you just like will go to your account and say, yeah, he's blocking something.
Could I
so
be
who's Antonio Brown here?
Also Josh?
That's what I thought the answer was going to be.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Am I also Le'Veon Bell?
Probably.
Yeah. Can I also be Mike Tomlin? Like, it's also me that's barely holding it all together in a fragile ecosystem.
Yeah, like, it is just the 2018 Pittsburgh
the 2018 Steelers.
All just all inside it.
Is Rudy James Conner or is that also you?
Take the show with you by listening on the Sports Radio 810 mobile app at 810WHB.com or by searching for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts.
Huzzah! I'm not an idiot yet. You just weren't me saying, huzzah, I'm not an idiot yet?
Yes.
That feels right.
This is Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810WHB.
Well, if it's been a strange season for the Kansas City Chiefs, being here today on a Thursday before a playoff game, not being 100% sure what we should actually be talking about, that feels like a pretty fitting, I don't know, start to the end of what this Chiefs season will ultimately entail. We'll have a lot to talk about here tonight on this edition of Almost Entirely Sports. Here with you for 3 hours. First hour, it'll be me and Rudy Salazar on the other side of the glass. And then we'll talk to, I've already gotten the order wrong again. Rudy and I have been quizzing each other on the hours that we're going to have our esteemed guests today. We'll have the one and only Craig Stout of KC Sports Network joining us at 8, and our dear friend Matt Verderam of FanSided joining us at 9. Honestly, if I hadn't looked at Twitter just then to see what Rudy wrote in the tweet, you might have been able to convince me that it was happening in any possible order. Anybody?
Craig at 4, Matt at 11.
Done. I believe you. Could have been any Matt also. Any of the touring, cycling Chiefs mats, of which I think there are 4, at least. You could just tell me that we're talking to 4 mats tonight, and I'd be like, all right, that makes sense. I texted them. I asked them what times they wanted to do. I just can't remember anything anymore. Yet another reason that I'm just, you know, we're all just aging into the abyss. But there's also a lot going on around the entire NFL right now. David Culley was let go a little bit after 2 o'clock today. The Texans made that move, making him a one and done head coach, despite the fact that he did exactly what you could have hoped him to do in that particular situation. But the gang over there will, you know, make another hire and they'll figure it out and they'll trade Deshaun Watson and hopefully for David Culley. There are some different numbers going around because one report said that really only 2 years of it were really guaranteed.
I think it was Pelissero tweeted out like around 6-ish that he was getting, I think it was 22 total over essentially the 3 years.
Yeah, and I think that one of the earlier reports was, yeah, so Pelissero says they owe David Culley another $17 million over the next 3 years. So,
that's what it is, on top of, I think, the 5 that he was making this year.
Obviously, I hope that's what, ends up coming of that for him, is that he was a, just a bleep eater there for a year and got a healthy payday for it.
Being a sacrificial lamb is like, it's not fair for David Culley, right? And here's the thing. He, to a degree, kind of like knew what he was stepping into, right?
Sure.
To a degree, he knew that this was, that he was viewed as a potential, just a 1 year stopgap.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes you wonder, you couldn't have gotten a 1 year stopgap for like a little bit. Let's just
right.
say those numbers are true. You couldn't have worked out a cheaper deal. Anyways, David Culley kind of knew what he was stepping into to a degree, but also probably thought, you know, like he would probably felt some reassurance that this was more than just a 1 year plan, right? That if he did well,
yeah.
If he gave them a reason to keep him around, that he would. He gave them again, they were not a good team, but they were a competitive team. There was a little bit of the, you know, Detroit Lions right there,
uh-huh.
right? Where like they were not the worst team in the NFL. They were competitive. They fought.
And they didn't seem like they were all over their coach,
yeah,
right?
And he gets fired. But I will say, good job, David Coley.
Because
like
that's again, the thing. At least get the bag on your way out.
You're gonna get like David Coley just made in a year, basically. I mean, definitely more than he's made it. Probably more than he's made in his entire life. I don't know.
I don't
know exactly what he was making as like you know various position coaches, and I think even the special teams coordinator.
Yeah.
So like, there's a good paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of money.
But he
might have just like made.
On the life
money.
Of this deal from one year, I think you're right.
Essentially from, you know, 6 months or 8 months of work, you know, however long he was from the day he was hired to the day he was fired. Just made a lot of money.
I don't think that David Coley himself would want to be looked at with pity today necessarily.
No.
I don't think that you should. I do think it's a microcosm of several larger issues. But this is one stat that I thought was striking. If you're right now going... Yeah, you know, David Coley got fired, but that team was 4-13, and they weren't very good, and I don't actually think David Coley was going to be a good head coach long-term there anyway, right? If you said that, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, I didn't necessarily think that hire was going to go anywhere when it happened. I just figured that, you know, good for him to get an opportunity. And I will say also, I think this looks today much worse for the Houston Texans than it does for David Coley. I think this is much more of a red flag that the Texans have shot up out of their own rumpf, and much more so than it's a red flag that David Coley got fired after a year. There were reports that he wouldn't make changes with his offensive staff, whatever. That came out a long time after that news came out today. Felt to me like somebody with the Texans being like, hey, well, also, you know, he wasn't perfect. But here's something that Ed Warder tweeted out earlier that I thought was just a good framing of this. If you are one to not be too concerned about David Coley, whatever, at least hear this out. The Texans went 4-12 last season with Deshaun Watson leading the NFL in passing. In David Coley's first and only season as head coach, they went 4-13 without Deshaun Watson taking a single snap. They added one game and also added one loss. But man, is that what you want to point out as a gigantic failure? On the other side, I saw an interesting video today that I had not seen before from when Nick Caserio was still with the Patriots and Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. It was a filmed thing. They were like a sit down in front of a camera, so this was all, you know, for ostensibly television or something. I'm not sure what it was from. But they talked about Nick Caserio and his versatility. They showed him taking some snaps in practice and really understanding the schemes they were running. And Belichick gave what I would call elation of praise. Belichick was elated to talk about how much he loved Nick Caserio on a Bill Belichick publicly speaking scale. He seems like he might work out. Everything else going on around the whole Houston entire enterprise, ownership, and then like the chaplain that ended up being way too high on the power pyramid or on the org chart kind of weirdly, Jack Easterby, all very weird. Firing David Coley after 1 year, not a good look. But Nick Caserio could work out. Now, there's also Nick Caserio saying that philosophical differences with David Coley over the long-term direction of the program. That's a summary from Pro Football Talk. You should be on that page before everybody takes the jobs, right? Like, don't partner with someone that you have philosophical differences with in terms of the long-term direction of the program. But anyway, again, that's all stuff where I think it just looks worse for the Texans than it does for David Coley. And again, the stuff that is a microcosm there, I think is probably more interesting in this specific situation. I think this specific situation, you can largely summarize by saying the Texans have been dysfunctional. David Coley was dealt the terrible hand, won as many games as they won last year, even without a quarterback, and last year's team had won, weathered a storm, and got a big bag of money for it. I think, not going big picture yet, but small picture, I think it more or less summarizes it.
And while, you know, the Houston owner,
McNair,
mm-hmm. he's going to be fine financially.
Yeah.
Like, he can pay David Coley this money.
There's no dead cap hit for a coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is something, though, like, I mean, like, I just don't know how, though, like, because, like, part of the thing that makes, like, part of how rich people get rich is by, like, caring about pennies, right?
Mm.
Like, that is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how, like, if you're the GM, like, how you even just, like, yeah, like, Let's just say the numbers are true. And even if they aren't, they're probably pretty
approximate.
Close.
Sure.
But let's just say that, like, it is what it is. Like, how do you just keep going up to the owner? Just like, yeah, I hired a guy. We fired him in less than a year. And you owe him $22 million because of it.
Yeah.
Like, that just seems like a bad way to start off that relationship.
There is something that you've touched on there, I think, Rudy. Fascinating within the psychology of sports owners.
Yeah.
I would love, and this is something that I am not the first person to belabor, but the amount of coverage that we don't get of sports ownership is maybe the biggest blind spot in all of sports media. The business side / the ownership side. My mom knows who Jerry Jones is, right? Because he is one of very few owners in all of American sports to be, in part, the face of the franchise. George Steinbrenner, like...
Jerry Jones has not won, but two weekly radio shows.
Perfect.
Like essentially, you know, like GMs don't have weekly shows. And no. Jerry Jones, neither do owners. Coaches will appear on a show usually. There's not necessarily a coach show, but there's usually a team show that has a coach and player. Jerry Jones has his own show, two of them, that are each an hour long on different radio stations. Because, like, that's Jerry Jones.
Can you imagine Clark Hunt having a weekly show here? You know, we just had Crunch Time just played.
A lot of respect for Clark Hunt. That show would be boring.
Crunch Time with Frank Bull, Tim Grunhard, and Clark Hunt.
I will say, though.
That show might rule.
That show would be great. And you know what? You know what would happen if we had this show? I'd find out if Clark Hunt hit the drive-thru or not. That'd be my first thing I figure out.
Right.
Like, Clark,
see, something like that.
When was the last time you went to McDonald's drive-thru? Not Grubhubbed it. Not DoorDashed it.
Not bought the franchise and then had it brought to your home.
You sat in line.
Yeah.
At a fast food place, just like scrolling Twitter on your phone, waiting to pull up.
That would be fun. Right now, if I'm thinking of other owners we know, we know Robert Kraft partially because of unprecedented greatness in the sports.
Oh, I thought you were going a different direction.
And then all of that, right? Like, there are two reasons you know who he is.
Yep. He's had enough clashes with Roger Goodell that makes him, which,
and we got used to seeing his freaking face at the 50 in the Super Bowl six different times.
This is another little, like, it's kind of in the same realm, but I always enjoy it whenever, because I feel like the one time you do especially get when fans talk about owners a lot, it's usually always about Roger Goodell and, like, how does he have this job because the owners hate him so much? Well, they don't because they're his boss.
Yes.
Roger Goodell is not not at the top.
Correct.
Roger Goodell, and honestly, I know a lot of people don't like the man. Again, getting a little off topic here, but it's just popped in my head. I have a ton of respect for Roger Goodell because Roger Goodell is just cool with being the bad guy and making like $50 million a year. I've never seen the movie, but Al Pacino once said in Scarface, "You need the bad guy. I'm the bad guy. You need me."
Roger Goodell is...
He's Al Pacino, Scarface, just cocaine everywhere.
Yes. Exactly.
I'm the bad guy.
He's also the bag guy.
Because
he is both left holding it and holding it, if you know what I mean. He will be left holding the bag whenever there are embers around him, and someday he will probably be fired. I will guess he will not be retired. He will not retire. He will be retired, would be my guess.
He will...
With hundreds of millions of dollars.
At one point, because he'll just realize... At some point, it's just going to be like, hey, I'm good.
He'll be the fall guy for something bigger.
Yeah.
And then the NFL will make literally anybody else that guy.
And then he will step away. And then seven years later, he will be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Because you know why, Commissioner? I assume there's probably been a commissioner in a sport that wasn't in the Hall of Fame. But my guess is if there is any, it's that number's at one at most. Because commissioners rarely, I mean, I can't think of a commissioner who's had like a massive scandal. Really, at least one that led to him getting I can't think of a commissioner ever being fired. They usually just retire or die, or both. I would say dying is retiring in a way.
In a way, yeah. I mean, I was just pulling up all time NFL commissioners, just sort of curious if anything.
It's just crazy though, because you're right. Like, you know, we're seeing this in baseball, right? Like, we're not fully there yet. It's going to be about how the players are greedy, owners, you know, are in the right when it's just these owners are billionaires.
Right.
Like, we view owners. It's just, it's weird. And like, they don't get covered in the way that they probably should. And
well, right.
Everything's weird.
To that point, you listening right now might probably know the owners of your local team. You might know a few owners if you're listening to sports talk radio right now.
You probably heard the names of most NFL team owners, right? Like, if somebody said the word Jim Irsay, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's like that name probably.
Right.
But the NFL, I think, is the only sport like that, really.
And even with those guys, again,
and it's just because the NFL is this massive conglomerate.
Usually when they are in the spotlight, they would rather not be, yeah, though. And they most certainly don't typically have two radio shows every week.
The only owners I can really think of at the top of my head that like actively want to be in the spotlight, I'm talking about like main owners, because like, mm-hmm, you can find
minority owners.
Like Will Ferrell is an owner of LAFC. He wants to be in the spotlight because that's his job, right? Mm-hmm. But like main owners, the only two I can really think of at the top of my head who want to be in the spotlight is Jerry Jones and Mark Cuban. Maybe Jim Irsay to a degree.
I was going to say Steve Ballmer to
Steve
a degree.
Ballmer
There's
to
probably
a, degree.
A couple names, yeah, you're not thinking of. And largely it's beside the point.
Some of those guys, I'm saying, maybe it's more of they're fine with being in the spotlight as much as, like I think Jerry Jones and Mark Cuban actively seek it out.
Yes.
Ballmer probably, I don't follow. I think he's just more comfortable with it as much.
That's fair.
Not maybe so much seeks it out. But that's a fine line there, right? Like, I would say the Heat owners are I don't remember. I just know they're brothers, kind of the same way. Part of that was, you know, they had LeBron James and it's Miami. And
right.
But yeah, like there's not a lot of owners that want to be in the limelight.
I just think, and again, we could go back and forth naming owners who we've heard of, but I'm curious how many of them you really would believe you know a lot about. And that number is outrageously small. And so whenever you have stuff like what's happening around the league right now with the head coach hirings and firings, you'll get a statement. You might even get a press conference. But so often, we don't know where that money is coming from. We don't know how these teams are spending their money outside of the capped stuff. And then you get a report every once in a while about how every billionaire with a sports team is using it for a tax break. You know, and that story comes up once every 2 or 3 years, and we all go, wow, that seems wild. Should we do something about that? Someone's like, I don't know, fantasy football, and then we move on.
I assume Mark Davis isn't, because it just feels like he would forget to do that. Like, check the box if you want a massive tax break because you're on a sports team, and he probably just, like, forgot to. That feels right.
And I also do feel like he's the most likely of NFL owners to do that himself.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not going to pay someone to do it.
He's absolutely filing his own taxes, and then every now and then hops on the TurboTax app to go talk to one of those specialists, and he's like, hey.
Yeah. He's definitely on TurboTax, and, you know, at the end it just shows that he owes, like, you know, $3 million or something, and all the rest of the owners are taking money out of my pocket.
And literally, I've watched Jerry Jones walk into the studio, punch Josh in the face, grab his wallet. When he saw he didn't have any cash, he grabbed his, I almost said ibuprofen. That's not what it is.
No.
You're, why am I drawing a
mic? I'm not going to help you.
I hate when this, you know when this happens when, like, the word you want just, like, escapes
all the time.
From you?
All the time. But you were so confident on this bit that I would like for you to remember the word insulin.
Insulin. Dang it. I was going to call it your diabetes stuff.
That's fine. I used to carry a bag. I could not remember
the I word all of a sudden. I was like, my brain is just shutting down.
What's your blood sugar? I can check it.
Like your liver did.
Pancreas.
Same thing?
Nope. Insulin and ibuprofen.
It's in your body there
pancreas
somewhere.
And liver, both really different. But here we are anyway. All of the ownership stuff there was a spinoff of you can pay to fix some of these problems, but also you have to eventually like hire well and then hire good people with all of this money that you're sitting on, which is one of the things that I do think is kind of interesting about all of that, where You can spend money into competence, but you can't necessarily make yourself better at hiring and your decision making and everything. You can certainly in the big picture. You might not be able to get the advantage over other NFL owners, though. And I think that's all kind of interesting. The other spinoff on that is that with David Coley and Brian Flores both being fired, the NFL currently has one black head coach in it, in a league that's approximately 70% black.
And I believe three minorities overall. Robert Saleh is Lebanese. Ron Rivera is... Is he Mexican-American, I believe?
We had this conversation last year, and
it's
it was like
three. It's one black and three minority in total, I believe.
I think that's right.
Unless I'm forgetting somebody else, but I believe those are the three.
And there are a thousand different ways that you could slice that, and there will be people who are better at it than I will be, so I would encourage you to seek out some of that more qualified commentary, perhaps. One thing that I thought about earlier, though, because I was thinking about, like, all right, we're going to talk about this at least some. It is sort of on a very sort of gallows humor sort of level. There's something very funny to me about the idea of someone objecting right now and being like, but there's only one black head coach, but it's just how it is. It's a meritocracy. What is that voice? I don't know.
Patrick Mahomes, what I thought.
Not who I was trying to do there.
I figured it wasn't, but that's just kind of what it sounded like. I just want to throw it out there. Patrick, if you're listening, know you're a big fan. Just was not making an impression of you.
Not a Patrick Mahomes impression.
He's just bad at making impressions unless it's Bill Clinton.
Or Pennywise the Clown.
Yeah.
And that had a little Pennywise in there, I think. But one thing that's sort of, the thing that's sort of, Not ha-ha funny, but sort of like funny, is the idea of someone genuinely making the case to me that 29 of the best head football coaches at the professional level in the world just all happen to be white. It's just this crazy coincidence that no one needs to look into. It just happens to be that 29 of the most qualified NFL head coaches just happen to be light on the melanin, you know?
And here's the thing, like,
it just happens that way.
Even the NFL doesn't believe that, because every year we see basically 8 coaches fired. It's pretty much a guarantee that every year a quarter of the league is going to roll over, right?
Yep.
So, like, even the NFL knows that not all their head coaches, regardless of race even, right, are actually the 32 best coaches in the world.
Right.
Because they're going to fire 8 of them every year.
And they also always try the same 3 guys.
Yeah, there
is not literally, it is figuratively the same 3 guys. Bill O'Brien's getting his interviews again, and some point within the next 5 years, Clint Kubiak will be a head coach. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, there are some guys who, like, my guess is this will be Joe Judge's one and only time, because he doesn't really have the coordinator thing to fall back on, right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have the Adam Gase, like, well, I was the offensive coordinator for Peyton Manning, we won a Super Bowl.
Right.
But basically all these other guys are going. Now, I will say this. I'm saying this, but I'm going to talk myself actually into Joe Judge getting another chance. He will get another chance if he goes to Alabama.
If he doesn't
go to Alabama, because, like, Freddie Kitchens, who I always think is coaching Alabama, but he's not. He's with the Giants, who actually maybe he'll be the next coach of the Giants. Who knows? But he's from Alabama. Freddie Kitchens feels like he will be on the Bama staff next year. And he'll
do
his whole rehab thing. Point being, if you're fired and you don't really have the, hey, I was a big-time coordinator, like Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson are going to continue getting looked because they have the Chiefs offensive coordinator thing to fall back on. It's a shame Eric Bieniemy doesn't have that.
I know. It really is ridiculous. It is.
If you don't have
really
the coordinator thing to fall back on, you go to Alabama, that's how you get head coach job.
And it's not even always the first. Very rarely do I roll my eyes at the first hire. Joe Judge, we all rolled our eyes the first time.
That one was.
We can all smell that one.
There are other guys who can be like, hey, maybe I think Eric Bieniemy is more qualified than this guy, but this guy is qualified. It makes sense that he was hired, right? Nick Sirianni seems like one of those guys, right?
Right.
Heading into this season, Eric Bieniemy had more qualifications than him.
Mm-hmm.
But he also seemed like a smart guy who was clearly going to get a shot one day, right? Mm-hmm. He was qualified. Joe Judge had nothing.
Never made sense. Because then if you're like, let's go... McVay tree, Zach Taylor, whatever, you know, you're trying
Patriots
to microwave it. But right. But Joe Judge was.
But like he was never
on the Patriots and not
about being like part of the thing, right? Like Brian Flores got mentioned a lot. Like they're big beard dude who was the Lions coach.
Patricia
gets mentioned. Right,
where is he right now?
He's back on the Patriots, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, right. Is he really?
I think he's like he's not the DC there obviously now because Belichick's son is, but I think he's like the linebackers coach.
His second chance will I think come someday.
Yeah,
it's hard to wash the Lions stink off of you
for sure.
But Matt Patricia might end up with a head coaching job, another head coaching job before Jim Caldwell does.
I was a little bit sick because like Jim Caldwell's not getting
had a winning record with the Lions. Now look, did he seem like a very quiet kind of boring conversation? Yeah, he did. He had a winning record with the Detroit Lions. They made the playoffs one of those years. You kidding me?
It is funny because like, and I can think of multiple white coaches. There's only actually at the top of my head, and you might have somebody else. I can only really think of one, just whether black coach, minority coach, however you want to put it, like right, who's gotten like multiple chances, And it's Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackson might be the only, like, might be the only one who kept getting chances, even though, like, it was pretty clear. Not a great head coach. His teams were not good. They were never good. He got a lot of chances. But that might be where the list starts and ends.
Yeah.
And that's...
Did Marvin Lewis ever want to get back into head coaching?
I don't know. Maybe.
He was there for a really long time, and I understand that. But, like, that is one of those things.
My guess is if Marvin Lewis wanted to, somebody would have hired him because...
I don't know.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, Lovie Smith had to go to the college
back
route.
Back to college, yeah. Like, one of the things about this that I do think should be beyond even being a topic of conversation at this point, because we should just simply know this to be true. Whenever you are predominantly having meetings, not quite to the same rate as even the head coaches right now, but predominantly having, well, it might be true for ownership, having meetings with largely white GMs and largely white ownership, a black coach... with the numbers right there at the surface, has to be overqualified, and then we'll have typically a shorter timeline to reach success. And if they do not on that first timeline, much more rarely will they get a second chance to do that with whatever they've learned from that experience. That is something that is at this point, demonstrably true. We have genuine evidence of that, and also the NFL not particularly seeming to move in the right direction on that front. I don't have a fix for it, obviously. I'm not sure what to do about it, but to act like there is not a very obvious pattern here is really silly. Now, look, if David Culley was white, would he be the head coach of the Texans today? I don't know. Probably not. It seems like there's a Texans thing going on there.
It really does seem like they went out and like, hey, we are hiring a coach to fire him. It doesn't matter what they do.
Right.
But now, again,
now why did David Culley have to take that job and not wait for a better one?
Also, though, again, shouts to David Culley and his agent for working out that contract with that kind of buyout. Because, again, like, if you're the Texans, a guy like David Culley, who's never been a head coach, and again, this was the only shot probably he was ever going to get. Couldn't have just been like, hey, man, like this is what other options you got? We'll give you 1 year, 2 years. But good job, David Culley. Respect.
Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl, and his second tour is starting already, which could make plenty of sense. The Bears have fired Matt Nagy to interview Doug Peterson. Matt Nagy will be an offensive coordinator somewhere, and if that offense does anything, he will be back in the cycle in a year or two.
He might take a year off because sometimes a guy just wants
to take
a year off.
That's what Doug Peterson did.
Right? Yeah.
Makes sense.
But Matt Nagy is never going to have a problem finding a job, and he will be a head coach again. I'm very confident.
I think he probably will be.
Unless the only way he's not, I think, is if he goes somewhere to be the OC.
And the offense stinks.
It's just a... it is bad, bad.
Yes.
I think it could just be even mediocre and him still get another job because he's got that Chiefs, you know, that Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes Chiefs, you know, background. It would have to be, like, embarrassingly bad.
And what did it take for Eric Bieniemy to, again, other factors and stuff. I'm not pretending that it is only one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what did Eric Bieniemy have to have happen for his name to clearly fall to a second or third tier head coaching candidacy? Two things had to happen. One is that the Chiefs dropped some passes that turned into turnovers. And the second thing that happened, more impactfully, I think, is that he wasn't hired already. I think he's genuinely interviewed with like a dozen teams at this point over the whole course of his interviews. And that might be some duplicates. He may have interviewed with some team 3 years ago that he's interviewed with last year or something.
I rolled the last hour of the program. I think Petra said eight is what, okay. What he was at. It was seven or eight. So I think that's kind of – and now, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but Petra, I feel
that like you're talking about a quarter of the
yes.
league if it's eight. A quarter of the league. And – I just think here's where I would try to make some distinction, clumsily, but some distinction. You can talk about David Culley and Brian Flores getting fired, in my opinion, both of them too soon, at least for the situations they were in. Again, I'm not telling you David Culley's a Super Bowl winning coach. But that was an unfair situation for him to be in. Got paid. Great for him.
Just so you know, because I didn't know about this either, but I looked it up. Apparently, and I don't know if you saw the whole Michael Lombardi thing with Brian Flores. Michael Lombardi said apparently Brian Flores was going around telling Tua, I wish I had Mac Jones over you. But then Michael Lombardi retracted his statement. Like, well, I didn't mean it quite like that. It's like, well, you literally said.
Massively weird.
I know for a fact that he said this to Tua.
Really strange behavior.
Yeah. Which I guess, like, again, like we kind of talked about it before the show, I guess if you're at the point where the quarterback and the head coach hate each other, which most reports, I don't know if that part of it's exactly true, does seem like they didn't have a great relationship.
Right, and I don't think Tua's going to be there next year anyway.
Who's the guy?
Who's the guy next year?
That's the thing, right? Like, you if you're the Dolphins, you have to stick with, like, you just almost have to stick with Tua now, because otherwise, what are you doing?
I think overhauling, probably, which is wild for a team that won 7 in a row late in the season. Anyway.
Yeah.
But like here's where I'll land the plane.
Back to back seasons with winning records.
Yeah, not enough. Here's where I'll land the plane on that. I do not think that the situations of David Coley and Brian Flores and Eric Bieniemy, and in a different turn, Mike Tomlin, and maybe it will be Byron Leftwich, a couple other current candidates, I don't think that the NFL season will kick off next year with one black head coach. I would think hope. Think slash hope.
Flores seems like he's going to be hired.
Maybe.
He might not.
You can talk about those situations and cover a ton of stuff there. There are a lot of factors. You cannot talk about their situations without talking about them being black in a enormously white position in a league that at that level is overwhelmingly white.
I do also.
You cannot separate those things and have an intellectually honest conversation that includes all of the factors that are at play here.
I also do find it humorous / sad that a big hiring offseason for black coaches will result in like 3 of them next year.
Correct.
Like, right, yeah. like a good offseason for if you are a black coach coming up and you're looking for hope. A good offseason is like Brian Flores gets hired and
Byron Leftwich's name has been up there. If half of the open vacant positions right now are filled with black head coaches,
that would be a huge win, because I don't know if that's ever
happened.
Because
you'd get up to 5.
I don't know if one off
in a league of 32.
I assume no offseason there have ever been 4 black coaches hired. I would assume. I could be wrong, but I would assume that's probably the case.
I would imagine.
And again,
that
even if you want to stretch it out, just minority coaches in general, I don't think there's probably ever been 4 minority coaches hired in one offseason.
Maybe I'm arguing with a voice in my head that doesn't really exist in the Twitch chat or whatever. So again, maybe I'm arguing against a scarecrow, a straw man of some sort. But it's also the thing that there was. I'll get my facts right on this. I want to try to get actual like any single details. Rachel Balkovec. Is going to be the first woman to manage a team in an affiliated baseball league in the minors with the Yankee system. Somebody tweeted out this point, say if you want to understand where we're at in this conversation, the first ever female manager of a minor league baseball team. Again, I'm stealing this thought from someone else. If your thought is to ask about her credentials, and if she should be in that position, and if she earned that spot, or how the clubhouse will respond, ask yourself if you have ever done that for any other minor league manager in the history of you caring about baseball. And if the only person that you apply to that kind of scrutiny to is to the first woman to end up in that spot, the problem isn't with her or with baseball. It might be. But in this instance, the issue is not, was this woman properly qualified? And generally speaking, to be a minority breaking through any sort of barrier, you have to be majorly overly qualified.
That's what I was gonna say. Probably overqualified.
You almost have to be. But if you are applying that level of scrutiny to a minor league baseball manager that you have never applied to any other minor league baseball manager in the history of you caring about sports, that's pretty damn telling. And I would like to think that we're at a point right now where we can acknowledge that that is a truth of minorities in positions of leadership and positions in, of leadership in sports, as general or as specific as you'd like to make it. You will only make yourself look like a fool, or at least like a person missing a significant chunk of life experience, if you decide that you are going to try to pretend that much of anything, even sports, is actually a meritocracy that will judge you solely on your qualifications and experience and direction and all of those things. That is also a luxury that most minorities in all of these circumstances are not allowed to assume. Many cases because they have been given evidence to the contrary. That's just a part of the conversation that you have to include. You cannot pretend that is not a part of the conversation. We're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, we will change gears significantly because Rudy hasn't heard this yet, but I want him to hear what Bart Scott said today. Oftentimes, we play an audio clip from something like Get Up, which is where I believe that this audio clip happened. And it
great show. Love Greeny. Big fan.
And I'm just really excited for you to hear today's clip, Rudy. We'll talk about that whenever you come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Wow, the censorship continues. Rudy's just throwing us all off.
I pulled the wrong fader down. I was pulling down. I thought I was pulling down cart one, but
suspicious.
You know what? You know what? Restart.
No, that's okay. No, it's fine. It's funnier this way. No, please.
This is almost
it's
entirely
than it was
sports
before.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice.
Oh, that's weird. I think that's just the liner's broken.
That doesn't seem right. It feels like someone may have gotten in and corrupted our files. Real quick, I'm going to repeat myself on this, but it's what I wish better for humanity at the moment, and then we'll talk about my favorite story of the day. Plenty of Chiefs Steelers today also. I wish we were all better at not being weirdly defensive on behalf of people that we do not need to be defending and just listen to people who tell you about their experiences, because not everything has to be wildly hyperbolic. Because again, I it would be disingenuous to say Eric Bieniemy is not getting a head coaching job solely because of the color of his skin. I don't know that would be fair. I also think it would be insane to say that has nothing to do with it in the greater construct of the NFL head coaching cycle.
I also find it like weird how we like to pretend that we know people who we don't know.
Yeah,
right. Like I'll use Patrick Mahomes' example because he seems like a really good dude who has nothing in his right. Or like nothing is out.
Why don't you just use Deshaun Watson? Because we don't have to be hype. We don't have to play the.
Oh no! I wasn't doing the
game.
I wasn't doing that. I was just more.
No, that's all right.
I don't know.
But Deshaun Watson, I think, will probably work on your plan.
But I think we do know who Deshaun Watson is.
We do now.
Yeah.
We do now.
Yeah.
I was going to the former version of Deshaun Watson.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Right? Like Deshaun Watson had it all. Right? The national title game. It was just hey, this. I remember stories after the flooding in Texas of him like. Literally just like going up to the cafeteria workers, right, and paying like just giving them money to pay for all their damages to fix everything right to get their lives back on. That's amazing. Seemed like literally the perfect quarterback that you would want, right? Great guy, obviously amazingly talented. And then it turns out he was just best case scenario, he's a big old creep.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in the most ideal still world of
it's just that
minimal pain and suffering. Uh-huh.
It's why like we just the reality is we do not know and that goes for everybody right in any organization
we just
like,
don't know
we
people
don't,
that well
we don't know them
we
and
know
honestly,
people want to say most
how
of the
often
time.
Do you see on the news about some guy who had people locked in his basement? It's like
he was the nicest
guy.
He was the best neighbor ever.
You don't know him and you don't have right. to you don't have to stick up for them and pretend like you know him. You don't.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
No, I must defend Elon Musk for some reason.
Well, I mean, he's a great guy. I mean, you know, I mean, PayPal.
Let's, Rudy doesn't know this audio. Bart Scott on Get Up today. He got up, and I'm going to play this audio for Rudy in a nice twist of fates here. And if you haven't heard this, it's the best audio you'll hear all week in terms of evaluating the playoff picture right now. And I thought that Bart Scott had a really interesting suggestion for how Josh Allen can stand firm against the New England Patriots this weekend.
The guy hates the cold. He doesn't play well. And he says the reason is because he's got bad circulation. So his toes get cold. And as you know, with your feet.
Can I get you a suggestion for him? Josh Allen listening? Can people get this message to him? Viagra. Take some Viagra for the game, baby. That'll fit that circulation going right.
I don't know how to move off of that.
I don't have any medical background, so I don't really have a response to that, but you play. So I don't
have a medical background.
A lot of us take Viagra, right? Because Viagra opens up the blood vessels.
A lot of us take Viagra. What do you mean?
A lot of NFL players, at least in my day, took Viagra because it opens up the blood vessels. A lot of endurance athletes. Because Viagra was first a heart medicine.
Response to this.
Right? So it builds up circulation, which makes sure that it gets the circulation to the feet.
So I actually saw a TikTok about this. Lemon and olive oil, I think, is actually a much better natural solution than, you know, a pill that's full of chemicals.
I hate to ask this follow-up question, Rudy, but a better natural solution to which problem?
Blood pressure or
blood flow.
Blood flow.
What was the
saw a TikTok about this?
What was it?
I wish I could remember exactly what it was. I think it was lemon. The first thing I said was olive oil. I don't think that's right. But it
doesn't make sense.
It's like a lemon and something, right? It's like a little natural concoction.
A natural what?
Concoction.
I mean, look. I said this on the Zone earlier today. I'll reuse a joke. I don't care. I'm not above that. Josh Allen against the Patriots. We all know this will be hard. To bring down in the pocket. Sorry. We know that. That is obviously a part of Josh Allen's game. And I do think that several people have tweeted that would probably show up on a PED test. Which, to be fair, seems unfair.
Definitely.
Look, it's not that the NFL doesn't need to be checking on those types of performance-enhancing drugs. If you need to enhance your performance, you know, handle your business, as a wise man once said.
Like, was it Manuel Acho? Yeah, I think it was Emmanuel, not Sam, but Manuel Acho. You really need to be focused more on the marijuana because that's the biggest performance enhancing drug for an athlete.
Yes, that was Emmanuel Acho who did say that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Biggest.
Yeah.
PED.
Yeah, more than effing horse steroids, probably.
Yeah, it's not really a PED.
That's
not for a human.
It's natural.
It's for a horse.
I just want to make sure that everyone got to hear that audio and that suggestion. And look, I mean, like I said, it was originally a heart medication. So why can't it be used for blood flow to keep your toes warm, I guess? I don't know.
It's very good.
Jason did point out that, like, what if that game goes into overtime and lasts longer than 4 hours? Or what if it doesn't?
Well, in theory, I mean, if it goes longer than 4 hours, he could still feeling the effects of it because they do put the warning, contact the doctor, and he's going to have plenty of them on the sidelines.
That's
it's not like
true.
You have to go far.
That's true.
So maybe you just tough it out for 4 hours and 15 minutes, and then you go get the help you need.
This tweet didn't get enough love. I'm kind of mad about it. But I was listening to a Spotify curated playlist driving home from here the first time today. And the song All Me by Drake featuring 2 Chainz and Big Sean came on. Haven't listened to that song in a while. I was listening to it. And there's a lyric from 2 Chainz. He says, "From the A to Toronto, we let the metal go off. And my bleep so hard, it make the metal detector go off." And I just thought it was cool to, like, begin to piece together what the Bart Scott pregame playlist is like. Because I'll tell you what, if Twitch chat or any of our viewer chat or people on Twitter would like to go ahead and continue, I might go ahead and tweet this out also. Go ahead and let me know what you think belongs in the Bart Scott playlist.
Heart in the paint.
I think there's a lot of good options there. I think everyone should just try to, you know, keep in mind what you think might get him in the right headspace. Was that a pun? I'll never tell. Ice Pyro said Viagra is using very high altitudes to help against oxygen deprivation, which is interesting.
Is New England a high altitude?
I think it's going to be very, very cold. I don't know if it's necessarily high altitude.
But, I mean, that Patriots defense is so suffocating, you're a little oxygen deprived.
We've been making jokes about this all day because it's hilarious, objectively. But I do have some, I would say, procedural questions. Because I don't know if that's a medication that you can necessarily, like, pick and choose where it helps circulate, right? I don't.
If you concentrate hard enough.
Yeah, can you just be like, go to my feet, go to my feet, go to my feet?
Feet will become really hard. Because all the blood's there.
I have a lot of questions.
And then when you're about to throw the ball, you channel it into your arm.
Wow!
About 10 more yards on that pass.
Interesting.
Yeah. You just got to channel it into the area of the body that you want.
That feels like a superpower. At that point, something like a Mr. Fantastic thing there somewhere. I'm not sure. And my bleep so hard it make the metal detector go off also is like the definition of a weird flex.
It's a strange thing to be like. It's not a strange thing to be proud of. You should be proud of it.
Well,
it's just I just imagine him going around telling people about
right.
it. Like, just, like, at a party or, at, you know, just, like, at his kid's pizza, you know, you're at the kid's recital, right?
Don't talk about this at the kid's recital like, under any circumstances.
It seems like a weird thing to flex about on just a day-to-day basis.
But there's also the logistics of it, I think, regardless, shouldn't make a metal detector go off. I think if it makes a metal detector go off, something has gone wrong.
Or right. However you look at it.
Something has happened. Something unnatural has happened. And also, why is that your status at the airport? Seems really inconvenient. If nothing else. Anyway. I hope Josh Allen's able to stand tall against the Patriots. I will be rooting for the Bills regardless. And I just think it's nice that the first segment we talked about dysfunction, and in this segment we talked about.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Beetlejuice, 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 Kaepernick, Kaepernick, Kaepernick.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
An update on a topic previously covered on Almost Entirely Sports. Jordan Foote has tweeted out that he is currently watching the Andy Griffith Show. On MeTV, he has posted a screen cap of it to verify. He's going to start Squid Game later.
Very similar shows.
Here's an interesting thing also.
Andy Griffith was the Squid Game in the 1960s, actually.
On Twitter here noted that there's two black offensive coordinators in football right now, being Eric Bieniemy and Byron Leftwich. You want to talk about the pipeline issue there? As Albert Breer tweeted earlier, strong list of black head coaching candidates this year. Flores, Raheem Morris, Todd Bowles, Leslie Frazier, Gerard Mayo, D'Amico Ryans. That is a list of defensive coaches, which is also where black coaches typically have an easier time rising up as opposed to being offensive coordinators, where Eric Bieniemy and Byron Leftwich are the extreme outliers. That's probably all a big coincidence. You guys are right. Probably nothing to see there. Maybe we should look into that. Chiefs Steelers talk next.